Claims procedures for tax credits are quite complex. Claimants will claim either or both of the credits using Form TC600. Claims will initially be based on a base year. Essentially, this will be an estimate. The entitlement will then be revised based on the income figures of the actual year. The base year is the year preceding the actual year. For example, tax credit claims for 2010-11 are initially based on 2009-10 income, then revised to 2010-11 income once the figures are finalised. HMRC will only backdate claims by 3 months. Therefore, if a claimant wishes to receive credits from April 2010, the Form TC600 should have been submitted by the 6th of July 2010. Failure to make a prompt claim will therefore result in a loss of credits. Many taxpayers have therefore been advised to make protective claims in order to register a potential claim with the revenue. Therefore, even if the revenue initially issue a nil award, if circumstances change, for example, there is a fall in income later in the year, on revising the claim to an actual basis, some credits may be due. At the end of the tax year, claimants will be sent a renewal pack. Most claimants will be required to complete an annual declaration, which asks for details of income for the year just ended to finalise the previous year's award and to enable the claimants to make a claim for the forthcoming year. The form will need to be signed and submitted to the revenue by the 31st of July. Both parties should sign if it is a joint claim. For example, on the 6th of April 2011, claimants will receive a renewal form asking for their 2010-11 income, in order that tax credit claims for 2010-11 can be revised to actual. The due date for this form is the 31st of July 2011. If actual income for 2010-11 is not known by that date, estimates will be required. Actual figures must then be provided by the 31st of January in the following year, i.e. by the 31st of January 2012 in this instance. Claimants who are only entitled to the family element of the child tax credit will only receive an annual review form, which is a statement of the previous year's award. Provided the details are correct, no further action is necessary, and the claim is automatically renewed. If any details are incorrect, HMRC must be notified. A penalty of £300 can be levied for a failure to file a return. Additional penalties of up to £60 per day can be added for continuing failures. A penalty of up to £3,000 can be levied for a fraudulent or negligent claim. This system is designed to be responsive, so any changes in the claimant's circumstances should be notified to the revenue to enable them to revise the credits due as appropriate. Certain changes in the claimant's circumstances must be reported to HMRC within 1 month to avoid a penalty. These will include changes in the tax credit claiming unit, e.g. marriage, separation, etc., or changes in working hours such that the 30 hours per week threshold is no longer met. A penalty of up to £300 may be charged if such changes are not notified. It is advisable for a claimant to notify any changes in income levels as soon as possible, in order that the revenue can adjust the levels of payment of credits. This will avoid large under- or overpayments when the end-of-year form is filed. If actual income for 2010-11 turns out to be less than that provisionally estimated based on 2009-10 figures, there will be additional credits due to the claimant. Conversely, if actual income turns out to be higher than shown on the original form TC600, some credits may need to be clawed back. In the case of a joint claim, the claimants are jointly and severally liable for this refund. The revenue will recover the overpaid credits, either by reducing future credits or by adjusting the PAYE code. Alternatively, the revenue can issue an assessment and demand repayment within 30 days. It will be possible to arrange a repayment schedule with the revenue for large amounts of repayments. Where there is an income increase of £25,000 or less, this will be ignored. If the increase exceeds £25,000, there will be a clawback of credits at a rate of 39% of the excess income over £25,000. Jonathan and Abigail are married with two children, aged 10 and 4. Both work full-time. Jonathan earns £20,800 per year. Abigail earns £15,600 per year. They pay childcare costs of £180 per week. They will be entitled to working tax credits and child tax credits.
They will receive the basic working tax credit, plus the couples element, plus an extra £790, as they work for more than 30 hours a week. Relief is also given for 80% of their childcare costs. The couple will receive two basic child tax credits, plus the family element of £545, adding up to a maximum entitlement of £17,233. This will be abated based on their joint income. The restriction is at 39% on income above the threshold, giving a total award of £5,541. When Jonathan and Abigail come to file their actual tax credit return for 2010-11, it transpires that their joint income was higher than expected due to a bonus of £28,000 received by Jonathan in March 2011. Their actual income for 2010-11 was £48,800 for Jonathan and £15,600 for Abigail. Their joint income of £64,400 is £28,000 higher than previously estimated. As the income has increased by more than £25,000, we cannot ignore it. There will, therefore, be a clawback in credits previously given. The credits clawed back by the revenue will be 39% of the excess of additional income, i.e. £28,000, over £25,000. Jonathan and Abigail will therefore need to repay £1,170 to the revenue. This can be reconciled as follows. We start with the maximum credits originally awarded before the income-based restriction. The abatement will be the excess of actual income minus £25,000 minus £6,420 multiplied by 39%. This gives a credit entitlement for the year of £4,371. Credits of £5,541 have already been paid to Jonathan and Abigail, leaving £1,170 to be repaid to HMRC. This will probably be collected by an adjustment to Jonathan's PAYE code.
Another added complication of the tax credit system is that the definition of income for the purposes of calculating the abatement in the working and child tax credits is not the same as income for income tax purposes. Whilst there is a broad correlation, there are significant differences. Therefore, when claimants are completing their tax credit returns, they cannot simply pick the numbers from their self-assessment returns. Here is a pro forma for calculating income for tax credit purposes. Remember that where a couple are making a joint claim, their income must be aggregated. We start with employment income and take the salary, etc., as per the form P60. We add employment benefits and expenses reimbursed that are not covered by a dispensation. When considering benefits, we do not take all of the benefits that are taxable as per the form P11D. Some are excluded. We shall look at this later. The taxable element of any termination payments should be counted, as should sick pay and maternity pay. The first £100 per week of maternity pay is ignored, so we just include the excess. We add any taxable social security benefits, such as job seeker's allowance, and finally deduct any employment-related expenses, such as those allowed under Section 336 of ITEPA 2003, qualifying travel expenses or professional subscriptions, etc. If the claimants have any trading profits, these are included. Here we take trading profits on a current year basis, as established for income tax purposes. Investment income should also be considered, this being bank interest, dividends and rental profits. We also count any foreign income and sundry income, such as income from trusts. The first £300 of investment income is ignored, so this figure can be deducted. Lastly, we take relief for trading losses made in the year, and for any approved pension payments or donations to charity under gift aid. The result is the income for tax credit purposes. Not all taxable benefits are included within the definition of employment income for tax credit purposes. The types of benefits we need to include are assets transferred to employees, settlement of employees' personal liabilities, payments by voucher or credit card, taxable mileage allowances, i.e. excess above statutory mileage rates, and car and fuel benefits. Other common taxable benefits, such as the cash equivalent of cheap taxable loans, employer-provided living accommodation, or private medical insurance, etc., are excluded. All foreign income is included on an arising basis, even if the income accrues to a non-domiciliary and is taxed on a remittance basis. This will mean that some non-taxable income will be included in the definition. Investment income need only be included if the gross amount exceeds £300. If the amount exceeds £300, only the excess needs to be included. Any unused amount cannot be transferred against other income. It is envisaged that, for many claimants, there will be no entry on the return for investment income. Note that no deduction can be made for certain expenses which are relievable for income tax purposes. Most notably, interest on qualifying loans and EIS and VCT subscriptions. A deduction is allowed for the gross amount of contributions to approved pension schemes. These will include personal pension contributions and retirement annuity premiums, but will not include contributions to occupational pension schemes, as these will already have been deducted in the calculation of salary as per the P60. Finally here, only current year gift aid donations are deductible. There are no carry-back provisions as there are for income tax. There are two practice questions to attempt to complete this session. You will need to refer to the tax credit rates in your tax tables in order to answer them.
We start with the working tax credit. Even though Julie works less than 30 hours per week, she will still be entitled to a working tax credit, as she has a child and works for at least 16 hours per week.
The basic credit is £1,920, to which we add the lone parent element of £1,890. As Julie works at least 16 hours, she gets credit for 80% of her childcare costs. She has a child under 16, so she will claim the child tax credit. The credit is £2,300 plus the family element of £545. Julie's total credit before abatement is £9,151.
We need to compute Julie's income to work out the abatement. Here we ignore her investment income as the gross amount is less than £300. Income for tax credit purposes is therefore her salary of £10,400, giving an abatement of £1,552.
Julie's tax credit award is therefore £7,599. In this question, the best place to start is by calculating the family's income for tax credit purposes. David has a salary of £40,000. To this we add the car benefit, but we do not include the cheap loan, as this benefit is excluded. As the claim is being made by a couple, we add in Victoria's income.
Victoria has a salary of £18,000. David makes gross personal pension contributions of £250 per month. These can be deducted, leaving income for tax credit purposes of £57,000.
The couple will receive the basic working tax credit of £1,920, plus the couple's element, plus the additional £790, as between them they work over 30 hours.
Relief is also given for the childcare costs
as both work over 16 hours a week. The eligible childcare costs are under the cap of £300, therefore 80% are eligible for relief. The childcare tax credit is given twice, as they have two children. We add the family element of £545 to give a maximum entitlement of £18,065.
This will be abated as their joint income exceeds £6,420. Their joint income for credit purposes is £57,000. This gives an abatement of £19,726 and reduces their tax credits to zero.
While there is no minimum entitlement to working tax credit, there is a minimum child tax credit of £545. However, when income exceeds £50,000, this will be further reduced by £1 for every £15 of income above the £50,000 threshold. Here the reduction is £467, leaving a tax credit award of £78. As this is a child tax credit award, this will be paid directly to Victoria. This concludes this session on working tax credits and child tax credits.